He's going to be talking about implementing an open EO compliant backend for processing data cubes on JEO DPP. So please join me in welcoming Peter.
I use the phone.
Yes, please.
Thank you for this introduction. So my name is Peter Kempeneers. I'm with the Joint Research Center of the European Commission, located in Ispra. And I'm going to talk about its implementation of an OpenEO compliant backend for processing data cubes on our data and processing platform. I would like to acknowledge my colleagues, Tomáš Kliment, André, who is also in this room, Davide De Marchi, and Pierre Swal. This is the outline of my talk. So I'm going to introduce this backend, this data and processing platform. Also introduce you to the concept of OpenEO. There was a talk of Jeroen Dries on Wednesday, but in case you missed it, I will go over the concept here again. And then talk about how we try to incorporate this OpenEO or to make our backend compliant to the concept. Then I will show you some results on the building blocks we have been built on for this OpenEO and for our internal use as well. So there's a data catalog to query our image collections, and then we're getting quite close to the presentation before. So also it was on data cubes, so this is a bit a similar approach. And then we've also been working quite hard on an open source Python package called PyGeo, which is also used for this results I show you at the end. And hopefully, if there's some time, some two small videos live. So what is this GeoDPP? It's a processing platform with about 12 petabytes of data. Most of it's Copernicus Sentinel-2 data. The data are connected to the processing nodes with 10 gigabit switches. For the processing itself, we have about 1,500 cores. And then I will go through especially two of the three I've listed here components of this data and processing platform, which we call GeoDesk, GeoBatch, and GeoLab. And especially those last two I will cover in a bit more detail. Here, a bit of a schematic overview of what the GeoDPP is about. As an entry point for the internet, we have the web services. We have an internal part of the web services, which you see here as a JRC web services. Then there's the OpenEO part, which is supposed to be the entry point for users in general. But like this is a proof of concept, so it's not yet for the public, let's say, for now. And there's a catalog, the data catalog, who is querying the data we have stored on our platform. Then one layer below, we have the OpenEO backend that makes things happen for OpenEO. And the services below the web services for internal use, the GeoDesk, Batch, and Lab, and all of this being served by this PyGeo library in Python we've designed. Very briefly, these web services, the internal web services, what are they? There's a GeoDesk, which is nothing else than a clientless desktop gateway. So you have the impression as working in your own desktop, but at the end, it is just a web service. And the advantage of it is that all the software is just already pre-installed, and there is a very fast connection to the data, so it's located near the data. It's much faster than if you would have your own desktop and trying to access data over the network. Then there's GeoBatch, which allows users to process data at large. And there's GeoLab, which is a similar thing as the Google Earth Engine. So it's a visualization and analysis platform that works in processing with in a deferred mode. So it's only processing what you see at the resolution you see in your viewer. So let's go a bit into more detail in how to make this compliant to OpenEO. What's the idea behind? So this is a general concept. What you see here on the right is clients can access the OpenEO in their own programming language, be it R, Python, or JavaScript, and they can push their code onto any of the compliant backends, so making it interoperable. Make this happen is the standardized communication interface in between that translate the client end's programming software to. Thank you. How does it work? Yeah. The client languages are Python, JavaScript in a kind of an intermediate language in the form of a graph, which is then transformed into a JSON file. And the different backends are then responsible of translating this standardized graph, what we call the core API of OpenEO, into their own implementation. This is how it looks like in more practical terms. We start with a collection. This is like more of an abstract idea, as we saw before in the data cubes. Rather than having file-based approach, we're not talking about files anymore. But a user think about a collection can be Sentinel-2, Level-2A, for example, as a collection. It then filters this collection by a bounding box, geographical bounding box, and a date range. This data is then loaded into on-the-fly data cubes, where the user specifies a spatial resolution, a temporal resolution, projection, perhaps a resampling if it's not the default nearest neighbor, and we create a data cube on the fly. This is the internal data model, so we're working with three-dimensional data cubes, where the third dimension is used for the time, XY for the spatial dimension, and the spectral bands are internally than different data pointers. So it's in fact a multi-band three-dimensional data cube. This data cube is then further processed by interpreting this graph sent by OpenEO to the server, and this graph is then parsed and then translated into the backend's own implementation details. This is an internal kitchen for the backend, and until a point where the last node says, I want to save this data, and this data is then fed back to the user or visualized on some screen. To make this happen, we've created this PyGeo library in Python that serves not only the OpenEO, but also the other internal services for our internal users at the Joint Research Center. And I'll go a bit into more detail about this this library. It's a Python package for analysis of geospatial data. It's developed in-house, and we are in the process of making this open source with the EU public license. It is able to bridge to other libraries, such as NumPy, without duplicating the memory. It is at the core written in C, C++ for performance, and we have bound this automatically through SWIG for flexibility, that it's better to prototype and easier to prototype. And then it can be used both in batch mode and in interactive modes, as we will see later in the examples. Just a few words on how this is done. So here, what you see on the left, it is the core libraries written in C and C++. there is this interface file you have to manually write, and this is then used by SWIG to create a SWIG module, which is linking, compiling, linking all these things together in order to get a Python package. So the magic is all done by SWIG. What you define actually here in this interface file is a list of the functions you want to bind, and there's also a whole world of pain you can go into if you define type maps and if you want to change some of the things you you want to customize. But other than that, it works quite well out of the box, and still it's magic for me how it works, but at the end you get into a Python package from your C++ library. Then, because this is an automatic system, the Python package you end up with is not so easy to work with. So what we've done here, and this is where Andre is coming into the scene, he's done a great job in putting this all into Python modules. So for the user, there's only what you see on the right-hand side in yellow. You see these Python modules, which are then accessing the gplib module here, the SWIG module, which is then accessing the dynamic libraries where the C++ codes have come into. So let's see how this can be used. The example I'll give here is something we've been working on for quite some time. It's creating a global Sentinel-2 cloud-free composite based on level 2 ADIL, so atmospherically corrected data, produced at full spatial and spectral resolution. So at each of the spectral resolutions, we are using the native spatial resolution at 10, either 20 or 60 meters. We, at the time we've been building this, it was we have used data from 2017. There was not yet the atmospherically correct data delivered by ESA, so we had to do this on our platform with the Sentucore software. And for those of you who are interested, we have published the result. All this data you can download. For now, it's still all in tiles, but we're also planning to do some web map service that you can visualize the data more easily. Internally, however, some details here on the large-scale processing. The way we've done it, we have kept the original resolutions of the MGRS tiles. There are about 30,000 tiles that are covering the landmass of the world, and it took about 15 hours to process all these tiles. Internally, what we use to visualize this data, so all these data are still in tiled format. We have created overviews for all the tiles that are in the same projection, creating a VRT file for it, and create some overviews for each of those VRT files. And then by creating a collection, so making the loop, as you were mentioning it in your presentation, we can create back a collection, so we can either use it for visualization, but also for the processing. And this is how it's done. So if it works, I would like to show you a small video on how we visualize this then in our platform. So this is should be this one here. It's not working, or somewhere hidden. Maybe you have to click on one of those.
It's over off the side of the
machine. Somewhere on the other. the room next door, maybe. Okay. So here, this is in a Jupyter notebook. So we create a collection on the in the cell upper left, and then the tiles are being accessed, and we can zoom and browse, as we all know it also from the Google Earth Engine. This is the actual product that's been created. You see the visual bands here at 10 meters spatial resolution. So I zoom here in the area of Bucharest. But the nice thing is that you don't have to prepare anything of the data rather than creating these virtual files, and with their overviews, you can just browse and it's loaded at any time you you zoom into it, the right tiles are being selected. So okay. So other than just visualizing, what we also can do is interactively process the data. We can also interactively process the data with this PyGeo library. Then this is done in GeoLab. At the upper left, we see we create a collection where we zoom into an area selecting Sentinel-2 data. Here, we create the code importing the PyGeo library, and we can create a code that is then what we can normally use for the large-scale processing, but here it is used in the deferred processing mode. So everything what is being, if we create a map here, if we zoom into an area, if we pan the map, the area that is processed, this code is actually processed in execution mode in deferred processing. So, and this allows you to actually prototype as if you would process an entire data set of the entire world, which is of course much faster. Otherwise you have to do the entire processing of the entire globe and in at the end to see that your algorithm is not working in this part of the world or in that part of the world. And it's so much easier to do it in the interactive mode where you can just browse to an area and then it's only processed on that resolution in that area. I'll just end with a conclusion and then maybe we can show the other video. I've been into some details of the GeoDPP backend, showing what the PyGeo Python package is all about. It can serve both the batch and the interactive processing mode. We have seen that the components that make it OpenEO compliant, with, for example, the collection catalog that is written in as a RESTful API, we can create on-the-fly data cubes from collections and then processing these data cubes. There's still some work in process. We're not there yet. We still have to work on the job queues, on the graph parsing, and also the user authentication. And so by just finishing off here, I would like to see if this other video is also working. I'm not sure. So this is the this one. Okay, I'll leave this up to you. Okay, so here you see I'm creating a collection here on the upper left. This is the actual code that's going to be processed. So if we cut this code, it can also be used to run on the full tiles in at large scale. But here we will. This is then to compare two different processings. So we will see that in a split window we can see the difference between two different implementations. We create a map, and then what you see on the right is a deferred processing mode. So you see on the left part is one implementation, on the right part is another implementation, and we can see how of the two, which one of the two is better performing in some areas. So to give the example, one is actually using some of the classification files that are used by that are produced by Sentucord. So there are some cloud information, some vegetation information, classifications, and you see. And on the right is an actual distance map to clouds. You see there's some black dark spots over there which were not there in the distance to cloud, because it's a shadow, and so the larger distances are not taken into account in the left, but in the right. Here you see some another. This is then some flaw of the processing on the right, where there were some remaining clouds that were not detected by the cloud algorithm. So even there, if you take into account the distance to cloud, but if the cloud was not discovered, then the distance doesn't bring anything. Whereas the other algorithm, for example, was taking into account a maximum NDVI and favoring all those pixels with the maximum NDVI, and was not taking that cloud. So each of those, just to show that each of the algorithms had their own flaws and pros. And using this interactive approach, it's much easier to design your algorithm. And with this, I'd like to end.
Great.
Thanks.
Well, thank you, Peter. I think that's really interesting. And I think the interactive, like on-the-fly processing and visualizations are really, really cool. And we don't have that. I'm jealous. So we've got questions in the audience.
How well supported is NetCDF format? Because all of the presentation I see with Open Data Cubes are just processing Landsat and Sentinels, but no one actually speaks about NetCDF files, which are very complex files for file formats.
For now, we're not using NetCDF. I mean, we're using GDAL as a backbone to access all the data. So normally, all formats of GDAL should be supported. Here, we try to use all the formats as they come into by the data provider. So in this case, when it's Sentinel-2, we are using directly the JPEG 2000 as they and we store them as such. As those are the majority of the data we're using, we're not using NetCDF for the moment.
Right. Thanks.
So if I've well understood, you write an algorithm in Python and it's transcripted to some JavaScript, is that right?
The library is a bit like what you have with the bindings of GDAL to Python. So the user is writing everything in Python. So it's the Python library that is the PyGeo library is used by the user, and in under the hood it's accessing the C++ code.
My question was more on the algorithm. I'm not completely familiar with OpenEO. Is the Python way of expressing your algorithms something that is standardized by OpenEO, or was it your own API? That was my question.
It's a bit. I understand better the question now. Part of it is what I've shown in the end. The example was not really an application of OpenEO. It was not ready yet for OpenEO. So this has been written in pure Python. However, if we would solve it the OpenEO way, which is not fully there yet, the user would write his own code in his own language. Could be R, Python, or JavaScript, and then there is an interpreter in between. So, at each of those languages, have their own interpreter to translate this into a middle layer. And the middle layer is a type of a graph where you just define all the different steps that are needed in a standardized language. This is then in the core API, and then each of the backend is interpreting this standard language into his own language, and that could be whatever language also, but that then up to the end the backend to do this work. But the code we have been using here to create those global mosaics, that was not ready yet for OpenEO. So that was just in plain Python.
Very much again.